Okay, we'll start the top of Chaf Vav and Aleph. The Gemara is continuing with, first of all, the Psak of Rabbi Yehuda Mishmo, that the Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. The Halacha like Rabbi Yossi means that we look in your yard and we say you could do as you please in your own yard, no matter what the implications will be for your neighbor. The exception to that being that Moda Rabbi Yossi be Giri Didei, that if it's directed Hezek, then we don't allow you to do it. Meaning that only if it's going to be Hezek that is indirect in the future, right? Now it's not immediate and present, then we say that it's fine. Whereas if it's immediate and present, we say you're a mazik v'adayim, and that we will not permit. So now the Gemara has a case in the top of Chovah ben Aleph, Debei bar Mirion, Brei Deravin, Kehava Naftze Kitna, when they used to comb out their flax, Hava Azla Rakta Umazka Inche. The chaff or the refuse there, the debris that was coming away after they combed it, was going out and damaging and causing problems for other people. So ato the kamei de Ravina. So they came before Ravina. Amalhu ki amina mod Rabbi Yossi b'giri delay. So when we say that we're mod Rabbi Yossi b'giri delay, hanemili deka azla mikocho. That's only when it comes directly. It's directly a result of your action. Hocha zikahu de kamamati lo. Right, the damage here is being caused by the wind. Meaning that had there been no wind, the refuse or the debris that was coming off of the flax wouldn't have gone anywhere. So it's the wind that's causing the damage over here, not the individual, not them. They're not mazik b'yadayim over here. So the obvious question is from Atkifla, Marbar of Ashi, Maishna Mizora Varuach Masayato. How's this different than the Malach of Zora on Shabbos? Machon Zora is exactly like this on Shabbos. You take the pile of grain, you take a pitchfork, you throw it up in the air, and the wind comes in and pulls away the chaff, blows away the chaff. And you are considered culpable in that case. That's one of the melechet Shabbos. So how come over there we say Zora veruach masayato, we to give it, or we attribute the action to that individual doing the Zora veruach masayato, and over here you're not willing to, right, connect between the individual's action and the damage that's being done. So Amruah kameid Mareimar, they brought this before Mareimar. Amluhu, Hainu, Zor Veruach Masayato. So Mareimar makes a statement, which is that they are equivalent. Right? That is, the answer is yes, that they are equal. Eino Chanami, you are Chayiv in this case, it is Gira Delay, Nezakim and Shabbos are exactly the same. And when you say Zorev Aruach Masayato, it's considered the koach of the individual that is doing it. It's as if you were Mazik B'yadayim. And in this case, he would have, right, called for them to stop acting in this manner because they were causing damage to others. So where it says, Ula Ravina. So Ravina, who, right before, was the one who was asked about the case of the Bei Bar Marion, the Bei Ravin, and he said to them that it's not a case of Giri Delay because the Ruach Masayato. So according to Ravina, Maishna, Minetz, Migetz, Ayotze Mitachar Patish. How is this different than the spark that comes flying out from under the hammer, right, that is hitting the anvil? Vezik, and over there it does damage. Dechayav L'shalem. Over there everybody agrees that if it causes a fire, the spark that's shooting out, that one would be culpable for such an action in Nizokin. It says, because the wind carries it, right? When it shoots out the spark or whatever, somebody ever comes out, it's carried by the wind.
Is it by the wind or is the power of the, when you...
It sounds like it's also there's some sort of wind or, that's what Rashi says, Chayav Hari Holi Chan Haruach, that the wind carried it further and that caused the fire to ignite over here. Or it, you know, it caused the spark to ignite. So now, why over there are you chayav? And over here, Ravina is suggesting that you be patur. It says, depends what. Hotam nechale delezel. Achan lo nechale delezel. Makes a difference on your intent. Over there, you want the spark to go out or away from the house because you don't want it to cause a fire. So your intent is for the spark to fly away. And then the ruach is only aiding or abetting what you already want to happen or the intentions of your action. Over here, when it comes to the combing of the flax, they're not interested necessarily in the wind blowing it away. They're just interested in separating it from the flax. Once it's separated from the flax, they have no interest in being blown to their neighbors or blowing anywhere else. It would be fine for them if it fell in their own property. They just are trying to separate, and therefore, right, their intention is not being carried out by the wind. Now,
why isn't that the answer with Malach? Why doesn't the Gemara answer with the case of Shabbat.
Oh, so very good. So the Gemara, we learned this together. Gemara Baba Kama Daf Samach has this exact question about Zorah Veruach and Sayato. And there the Gemara says, right, or differentiates between Shabbos and Nizakin. It's actually Mar Ravashi over there, who, or Ravashi, that separates between the two and says, when it comes to Nizakin, Grama Ben Nizakin is Patur. By Shabbos, is Meleches Machshevet Asra Torah. Meleches Machshevet Asra Torah means, generally, and we talked about it at the time, we spoke about it at the time in Daf Samach, that almost everywhere else in Shas, Melechus Mashavis is a tour or a kula, that we require intent, right, in order for something we can classify as an action or a problem on Shabbos, you need machshava. You need melechas machshavas. And for many times, that makes a melacha derabanan, or it makes that you're patur aval asur, or even mutar, if you lack melechas machshavas on Shabbos. This is the one place where melechas machshavas goes the chumra, because even though it's a case of groma, meaning that you're zorev, ruach, mesayato, and by nizakin you're patur, nevertheless, by Shabbos, it's considered melechas machshavas asra Torah, which is that your intent is being carried out. That's the nature of the melacha. The nature of melacha is that you throw it up and the wind blows it. And since that's the nature of melacha, it's considered as if you have, right, executed on this or done this melacha. And if you play the melacha, you're going to be chayav. So David, you're right. That is exactly how the Gemara in Shabbos differentiates. That's what Rashi says here, is exactly what Ravina believes. The reason that the Gemara is going after Mraymar is Mraymar, first of all, suggests that there's an equation between Nizakin and, right, Shabbos. Ravina did not make that equation. The Gemara doesn't even seem to address it. Rashi says that's Ravina's belief. That's exactly what Ravina believes. Ravina believes there's a differentiation between Nizakin and Shabbos. That's why the Gemara then came and asked, oh, even in Nizakin I see that you're still Chayav with the Ruach. And the answer is that the Nizakin of Nates looks a lot more like Shabbos than it does like Nizakin. Regular Nizakin, it's a Groma. Groma ba'alma, you're patur. By the case of the gates with the sparks shooting out, it's almost like Shabbos, because there it's Melechus Machshavas. And on Shabbos, the intent or the Ruach is doing what you intended to do. So do here by the spark. The Ruach is helping or aiding you to do exactly. That's your intent. That's what you want to happen. And therefore, you would be Chayav. So your differentiation is what the Gemara in Shabbos, in Baba Kama does. And here Rashi says that it's assumed in the Gemara already that Ravina believes that or learns like we did in the Gemara in Shabbos, in Baba Kama, the differentiation between Melechus Machshavas and Groma bin Nizakin. Now, the Tosfos asks over here, wait a minute, we learned in the Gemara in Baba Kama about Avno Sakino Maseo. If you had some sort of item that you placed on the roof of a house, and a wind, a ruach mitzuya comes and blows it away, and then someone gets injured by it, you are chayav mishum esh. That's an extension of you. It's a case of esh. So when he says, what about over here? Why don't we classify all these cases as a case of esh? You have a ruach, you have an item that you're taking. That item is now being taken by the wind and doing damage. It's the equivalent of avno sakino maso, a barosh gago, that he puts on rosh gago, ruach mitzuya comes, takes it, and then it damages somebody. So the Tosa says we have to differentiate, and listen to this. The Re says, "Vomeri delo dami leish de ein chayav mishum eish elo kishe asa adam et eish." The only time you're chayav in eish is when you made the fire. You actually have to light the fire. About hacha over here, eino selavado kolikar elo yedea ruach. Over here, you never make the fire whatsoever. Di la ruach, was there no wind? Lo hava rakta azla kolikar. The refuge or the debris would go nowhere. The same thing as if you blew on a coal and the wind also blew on the coal, that you are patur, as opposed to avno sakinu masa'o. You lit the fire because you placed the damaging item over there. Then when the ruach mitzuyah carries it, right, that your placement of the item is what starts, is like the start of the fire, and then the wind is blowing the fire away. Over here, right, you've never started the fire because the debris will go nowhere. I mean, debris will settle in your property and do
same
nothing.
Same thing with fire.
Fire is the mazik, right? It is the mazik itself that now can go and travel, and the ruach just takes it and helps it to travel, right?
Right. And fire can travel if there's a conductor. If
there's fuel, right? You need fuel. It would move, right? I mean, once you've lit the fire and it's there, it can damage, it can do anything. This stuff, the debris from this combing does nothing unless there is a wind here. I mean, that otherwise it'll just sit down. So therefore, they differentiate here. Why this is not a classification of Eish is because there is no Eish yet. in the Eish, or the Davar HaMazik, is only because there's wind taking debris somewhere else. There's no, the object itself is not a mazik when it sits in its place here. As opposed to fire, as opposed to Avnei Sikon Masel, which are items that can damage even when they're stationary where they are. I mean, it's only, the Ruach has only taken them to a new location that causes damage. Alright, the other question that Tosos addressed, which we just had in the previous Mishnayot, which is, don't you have a din of Marchikim in a Goren? Isn't there a demand, right, Marchikim in a Goren, that you have to move a Goren, you have to move any type of silo or pile, you have to move it away from your friend's property? I mean, that there's in the Goren, you got to distance it from your friend's property. So what happened to that requirement over here? So the Tosos suggests that that Mishnah is like the Rabbanan. And we're going according to Rabbi Yossi over here. That's only the Machayev Megirei Delei, right? So that's the answer. The answer is that this is Rabbi Yossi and not the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan is the one who require all these distances. Rabbi Yossi says, no, you do what you want, I do what I want, and everything will be fine.
Even not. This is talking about damages. Once it is God, because he is Chayev in damages. It's not talking about should he or should he not have been there. It's talking about...
No, the case is the Bay Bar Miriam. They're damaging their friend, the neighbor's property.
They owe them damage.
Right, but then Shemaim should insist that they move away, or Ravina, I'm sorry, should insist that they move away from the side of the property. He doesn't make a demand on them to move away. He just says that it's not Giri Delay. They can do what they want. It means that they can continue to do it. If they can continue to do it, there's no demand to be Marchik. Mishnah continues. Lo yita adam ilan samuch l'steh chavero ilankin rechik minu arba amot. A person may not plant a tree next to his friend's field unless he leaves four amot. We saw this earlier in the Masechta. Chad gufanim v'chad kol ilan. Doesn't matter if it's a vineyard or a tree. And that is because when you work and dirt around the tree or around the kerem, you need space to work. And if you place it right up on the border, you're going to end up entering your friend's property in order to take care of your tree and your vineyard. Hayak gedder ben tayim. So obviously the way to prevent that is to stick a fence, right? Good fences make good neighbors. Put up a fence, you can put your tree right up against the fence because then you're not going to go over the border to work your tree. You're going to go up against the wall. Each party can put it adjacent to the wall because, first of all, it's considered a separation so that it's not classified as kil'ayim. And number two, it's a separation that in effect that you're not going to enter your friend's property. If the roots of the tree go into your friend's property, you can go down, you can cut away the roots that are on the top three tefachim of your ground, hear me, from your ground down three tefachim, in order that when you plow, the plow won't get caught in those roots. That you have an entitlement to remove those roots. If you were digging in your own property, any of these structures would seem to be... right, some sort of water pools or caves, right, cisterns that you're digging. Kotseitz v'yoreid, you can cut and go down. But Itzim Shelo, and the wood belongs to him. Who that Shelo is unclear, right? Meaning that Itzim Shelo is Shelmi. I mean Shelo meaning to the Bala Eitz, or Shelo to the one who is digging, right? Who's the Bala Shet, the one who's digging over here? Rashi seems to might have had a different kirsa, or I don't know what happens. When Rashi says here Kotseitz. By the boar, Shiach Humara, he says, Kotseitz ba'omet gimel tfachim. He can cut down three tfachim. Rashi says, ba'omet gimel tfachim. So it seems to me either Rashi had a different girsa, or it was put out of, I don't know, or they had a different kotseitz in the first case, which we don't have. We have mamik, gimel tfachim. Rashi might have had kotseitz there, but he is kotseitz on the second boar, Shiach Humara, and says, gimel tfachim. Which seems to me that it's not the mission of saying gimel tfachim by machresha, and even more by boar, Shiach Humara. The Mashal, the Rashash, thank you, Tzvi, point out that you have to take away, if you take away the word Kotseitz, then it makes sense in Rashi. The Gimel Tfachim belongs to the first Divrei HaMatchil, because it doesn't make sense by Bor Shiach HaMara that you'd be limited to three Tfachim. Right now, Tana. Arba Amot Shamru, Kedei Avodat HaKerem. So we spoke about this before, that Avodat HaKerem is a Lashon Mush'al. Right? It's a borrowed term. Avodat HaKerem is used in the Mishnah to describe what you do around the vineyard. Our Mishnah already mentions an Ilan and a Kerem. So it's true of a tree, it's true of a Kerem. But the Gemara continues to use the term called Avodat HaKerem because that's something that's found in the Mishnah. What it does mean, not about vineyards alone, but anytime you need four amot around to work. So, Avar Shmuel, Lo Shanu Ela Be'eretz Yisrael. That's only true in Eretz Yisrael. Aba Bavel, Shtei Amot. In Bavel, you only need two amot of work. I know they had smaller plows, thinner areas that they worked. They had the narrow versions. So you have a braisa that says explicitly that you can only have to distance your tree away from your friend's border to amot. What about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says 4 amot. Must be that the answer is like Shmuel, that one in Eretz Yisrael it's 4 amot. In Bavel it is 2 amot shmamina. Some people ask it as a direct, as a question, or a stira between the braisa and the Mishnah. Our Mishnah, which says that you can only plant your tree on the board unless it's if it is four amot away. Tanya, don't we have a braisa shtei amot, that it must be 2 amot? Instead of Shmuel's statement being independent, he's coming to answer the stira here on Mishmuel. Ukasha kam bebavel kam beretz Yisrael. Our Mishnah is addressing the case in Eretz Yisrael, which is 4 amot. And there, and the other braisa, which says shtei amot, is addressing the situation in Bavel, where you have to only leave 2 amot. Rava bar Rav Chanan, havalei hanu dikle, amitzra de pardesa de Rav Yosef. So he had these palm trees. Rava bar Chanan had palm trees that were on the border of the pardesa. Now, even though pardes in modern days orchard, throughout the Bava Metzia, throughout Bava Vacha, Rashi always translates pardes as being kerem, as being a vineyard. So he has these bekalim. He has these palm trees on the border of the vineyard of Rav Yosef. Havatut tziporin, yatve bedikle. So he had the birds come and they were nesting in or sitting in his palm trees. So they were then, right, enjoying the local foods, and so therefore they were consuming the grapes or causing problems for the grapes in the vineyards next door, and causing a loss. So you know, of course, Rav Yossi says to Rav Chanan, cut your palm trees down. You're causing me damage. You're causing me hezek. Take your palm trees down. Right. So he says, what do you mean? I moved my trees 4 amot away from the border. I'm in compliance, right, with the ordinances here. Why should I have to cut my trees down? That's only for trees. When you're talking about trees, you only have to distance it 4 amot. When it comes to vineyards, you have to do it much more. So what's the question? What does the Mishnah say? Echad gvanim and echad ilanot. I mean, the Mishnah is explicit. It applies both to vineyards and to ilanot. Echad gvanim v'echad kol ilan. That's exactly what our Mishnah says. Doesn't matter if it's a vineyard or a tree. You got it. 4 amot is sufficient. That's only if they are of like, right, crops or of like production. So if you have 2 vineyards, then it's enough to move your vineyard or vines away from the border 4 amot. If you both have palm trees, both have trees on both sides, it's enough to move them away 4 amot. Because whatever is going to happen to your tree and doesn't cause the damage will be the same by the other's individual. But when you have different crops, when you have vineyards and trees, then there could be some mismatch here where, like in our instance, the birds, which are not damaging the palm trees, are causing a problem for the vineyard. So there you'd have to leave it out more. When it comes to a tree and a vineyard, you're going to have to leave much more space. So Amarle says, so it's a very great line. Right, why aren't they possibly like Rabbi Yossi over here? Right, so we'll have to see why that's the case. All right, now, he says, I won't, so Amarle, Ana lo kaitina, says, I won't cut the tree down. The Amar Rav, because Rav tells us that Haidikla detain kabo also the mikze, that any dekel that has a productive value or production of at least a kab worth of dates, then you're not allowed to cut it down. I mean, it's classified as a fruit tree. If it's a fruit tree, I'm not going to cut it down. Rav Rav Chini, no, okay, but that shouldn't matter over here, because in general we say when there is purpose, you're allowed to cut down even a fruit tree. But he says, Amar Chanina lo shachiv shechach debri el dekatz teinta belo zimne. Says that the only reason that my son, shechach, I don't know exactly, it's an interesting name, died was because he cut down a fig tree before its time, and that while it was still productive. So he says, despite the fact that it might have been permitted over here, nevertheless, he says that I don't want to cut down the fruit trees because we have the same statement from Rav Chanina that if you cut down productive fruit trees, then it will shorten one's life. So he says, I'm not going to do it. Mar, inechle likots. If you're up for it, Rav Yosef, you go ahead and cut down. You get permission to come down into my field and cut down the trees over here. So now, Tosus asks, wait a minute, we are allowed to, in general, cut down trees for purpose. Why is it, what's the point? Even fruit trees, not just Ilan Sirach, why are we here? So he says, you have to say that in general, that you're only allowed to cut it down if they cause extreme damage, if the fruit trees are causing, you know, excessive damage in the friend's property. Here, where it seems to be a little bit of damage to the friend's vineyard, then already maybe you have to weigh or consider the fact they are fruit trees, and it's not so permissible to cut down the fruit trees over here. But no. That's, I know, funny. It's funny that they left the Gemara leaves it like hanging in suspense here. Don't have to, the Gemara doesn't have any answer here. All right.
Well, the halacha is that it's mutter. In other words, there's a sakana that conflicts. The achronim, the shonim, the post can prove from here that when one person believes something's usher, he's allowed to tell someone else who thinks it's mutter to do it. And then one would have to say that it would be perfectly mutter for him to chop it down, but it, you know, he has to deal with the sakana on his own.
On his own, right? Although in general the Gemara says sakanta chamura misura, and the sakana is more chomor than isura, so that we don't say. Right, but no, but by sakana, a person takes his own risk. That's true. You can't, that you don't call it lifnei iver. The person's aware of the risks. He told him what the risks were. If he chooses to cut it down, that's his own risk.
They task in here. Right. They task in here that it's best to have a guy do it.
So Papa had these palm trees on the border of Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua. Azal Ashrichei Dava Chofar. So Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua, right, is working in his field. Rav Papa takes a peek over to see what his neighbor is doing, and he sees him cutting through all the roots over there. My high, what are you doing? You're cutting away the roots of my trees. Amalei, it's not. He says, I got a Mishnah. Hayu shorashim yotzim l'toch shechviro mamik shlosha kadei shalei akeva machrisha. So, in its explicit Mishnah, it says that I can cut away the roots so it doesn't cause the plow to get caught over here. So amalei, hani milei shlosha. Marker chafar tvei. That's three tefachim, but I can see. You're going a little deeper than those three tefachim. What are you doing over here? Amalei, ana borot shechim marot kachafarna. I'm not just clearing away the plow. I'm digging my big pits over here, and right against that Rashi, right? So, I'm digging my pits over here. You know, I can go as deep as I want. I can go more than three tefachim detan. I can go down. I can dig as deep as I want. So, what's your objection over here? So, Rapapa says, I tried to bring him many other proofs that I was right, that he shouldn't be cutting my roots, and I could not convince him ad amrile until I found the proper proof to get him. Since we had earlier in the Gemara, we had this back on Yibet Amad Aleph, also in Baba Kama, but that a public thoroughfare, which means a shortcut that has been established by the Rabbim, once they've taken a possession of it, I mean, once they have a chazakah to act in that way, it's an easement, and the easement cannot be removed. And once they've taken and have a chazakah on that area, they can't, you can't back them away, you can't take them away. So if there's a shortcut through your property that the Rabbim have used for right, a period of time, and there was no objection during that period of time, they now have acquired that right, and you can no longer remove them. So it's over here. My roots are growing into your property. You haven't objected to my roots being there, right? You didn't take them out. My roots now have a chazakah to go on your property, and therefore you can't remove them. Similar to the case of the Rabbim. Very good. So Tosus asked your question. We'll come back to Tosus in a second. Very good. It's an excellent question. The Batar Nefak, after he left, right? Amar Amaylo Amrile. Why didn't we say to him, or why didn't I say to him, Kan betoch shesh esrei amah, kan lechutz shesh esrei amah. Right, so after we had the this qualification, or this statement here, Rav Papa said, I finally convinced Rav Huna, right, with this memra of Rav Yehuda that he shouldn't go. And then after Rav Papa left, Rav Huna says, oh, I should have responded to him, I should have told him, it makes a difference between within 16 amot and outside of 16 amot. That a chazakah for roots is only established within 16 amot. Because within 16 amot, it's considered that it's the it's providing the nutritional value or the nutrition that the or sustenance that the tree needs. Beyond 16 amot, the roots are not classified as having being integral to the tree at that point in time. So therefore, you can only establish a chazaka for the first 16 amot because that is necessary for the tree. Beyond 16 amot,
but this wasn't 16 amot.
We don't know where it was. It was in his own field. Maybe it doesn't say where in his field it was in. Right. You make an assumption that he did it right on the board. It's not necessarily true. He could have been digging anywhere in his field and cutting the roots. So, if it's not the answer, then what?
He was saying,
that's where the trees are found. That's where the trees found. That doesn't tell you where he was digging. And it's obvious from his response over here that he was further away because he said, I should have responded between 16 and outside of 16. Now, to David's question, David said, wait a minute. Over there you're talking about a Rabim. Maybe it's shiny Rabim. Maybe Rabim is totally different. I mean, where Rabim has an easement that's different than a Yachid taking an easement. So the first thing that Tosfos says that he qualified, I pointed this out to you earlier on in the Gemara, that Tosfos in Yubet says it, he repeats it over here, that you're only allowed to take a possession if you do it Bershut. I mean, that first of all, Chazakat Rabim is only if you had a right to be there at some point in time.
You have to have a
taina. Right, so that's what Tosfos says over here. That may not be true in modern day law, that's not necessarily true. A Rabim can establish an easement even though technically they shouldn't have been there in the first place, but since there was no objection, then it becomes a right of passage, a right of usage, an easement, even without any claim as why you got there. Tosfos does not agree over here. Tosfos over here, Tosfos Yibet Amal says you have to have permission to have been there in the first place. If you never had permission to be there, that's it. That's one qualification. The second thing, which Tosfos asks, is what David is saying here. Wait a minute. What we're talking about over here is a Rabim. So how can you connect it? So Tosfos comes up with a totally new case over here. Right? He says that the case is not like we just compared it. Oh, just like the Rabim has a right, so do I have a right to have a chazak over here. But rather, what was it? It was a Ma'avar de Rabim. There was a path that the Rabim established. How big is a Rishut de Rabim? How big is a Rishut de Rabim? 16 Amot. So what was that? Rav Huna came along and he was digging outside of the 16 Amot. The Rabim had established a Rishut de Rabim, and here he's coming to dig up the area beyond the 16 Amot. It's in his property. So Rav Huna comes along and says, what are you doing? It's Meitzer Shechaziku Barabim. How can you go ahead and take it? So then after Rav Huna lives, Rav Huna says, I should have sent them 16 Amot. It's the limit. They have enough space once they have 16 Amot. You can't go beyond that. I'll just show you. It's an amazing rereading of the Gemara according to Tosfos. If you see, it's third line down at the top, Tosfos. Perish Rach Garivam. The Rabim Hechaziku B'mitzarim the Rav Huna. That the case here was that the Rabim took possession of the property alongside of the of Rav Huna, Uber Shuto, and it was in his it had to be with his permission. That's what I just said to you before. That without permission, the Rabim can't enter over here. Rav Huna is digging in this Rishut Rabim and cutting out the roots of Rav Papa. That's why they asked from Yehuda, Kevin Sheikh Barabim and Oshaylach Por. Once the Rabim have it there, why are you digging in a Rishut Rabim? So what's the answer of Sheikh Shisrama? It's nothing to do with roots, Sheikh Shisrama. The Meitzar that the Rabim have, you can't damage what they their new path, you can't do within 16 amot. So that's the Tosfos rereads the Gemara to deal with or avoid the problem that David is raising, which is that, right, how you bring a proof from something about the Rabim that can have an easement towards an individual gets a roots into his friend's property, right? Why should they two be connected? So Tosfos says that the case, you have to change the whole case based on that to say that the case is actually that he's digging in this Rishut Rabim that is in between. Rabbeinu Tam suggests otherwise that Rav Huna was cutting the actual roots and taking them for himself. All right, so that he went ahead and he did. So it says, listen, Rav Papa comes along and says, what are you doing? You know, meaning that I have a chazak over here. What's going on? How are you able to take him away? So that was the question of Rav Papa. Papa's question was not, okay, you can't cut the roots. All right, in Achanami, you can credit. He says, Nehi shalot toil chazakadi chazkat rabim. Okay, even though my chazak is not strong as a chazak of a rabim, that you shouldn't be able to cut it down, nevertheless, I should get the wood back at least. I should get the wood back because at least I have some chazak over here. Outside of 16 amot, the roots aren't yours anymore, and therefore I should be able to keep the wood. So you see that Tosfos, both from the Rach, right? And they revolt, as well as Rabbeinu Tam is trying to deal with this question. There is no equation or equivalence between Rabbim and a Yachid. So they come up with new cases to deal, or come up with a new conversation between them in order to deal with that issue. Rashi obviously says that it's a looser type of comparison, that just like a chazaka can be established when there's no objection, the same thing is here. There's a chazaka established, no objection. Therefore, you shouldn't have, you've given up your rights. If you give up your rights, you can't come back afterwards and try to assert your rights in these situations. All right, now, Gemara Kadiz, Bayiminei Yaakov Hadiaiva Me Rav Chista. Eitzim Shomei. That's what we asked in our Mishnah over here. The Eitzim over here, who do they belong to? Amalei Tinitu. We learned this. Sharshei Ilan Shel Helyot Abayim Shel Hekdesh. You have roots of a layman's tree that's on the, they're planted on a property adjacent to a Hekdesh property. They go into the Hekdesh property. Lo Nanin Velo Malalin. They don't have a problem with Meila. There's no problem getting Hana from them, that the roots belong to the Hejot. So he says, Iyamar Bishlam Abatar Ilan Azlina. And if we go after the tree, Shem Hachilo Malalin. And then there's no problem. You're not getting any hana from Hekdesh because the roots belong to the layperson. They belong to the tree, and therefore there's no problem here. Ilamar Batar Karka Azlin. If you go after the Shetach, after the area where the roots are found, Amaylo Malin. It's in the field of Hekdesh. Why shouldn't, when you take these roots, why shouldn't you be Chayab from Ilan? So Ilamai Batar Ilan Azlin. So what are you going to conclude, that we go after the tree? I'm a Seifa. What are you going to do with the second half of this brisa? Shel Hekdesh Habayim Shel Hejot. If you have a tree that's planted in Hekdesh and the roots go into the layman's property, Lo Nenin Velo Malin. Then you don't have an Isur Me'ilan. Now, based on what you're saying, if it goes after the Ilan when it goes into the property, why not? Why shouldn't you be Chayav Me'ilan? It's coming out of Hekdesh. It's a tree of Hekdesh going into your property. Vita Batar Ilan Azlin Amay Lo Malin. I say it's a Midiria. So, what's the case here? I mean, that the case is totally different. The case in this brisa is Bigidulin Abayim Lachami Kanaskina. We're dealing with growth. I mean, once a person is Magdisha tree, the question is, after he's been Magdisha tree, things that grow afterwards, are they Hekdesh or not? Which happens to be Machlokas Tanaim in other places. But this is what our brisa is addressing. The brisa is basically saying that Gidulim are not Hekdesh. And that's what it's addressing. It's not addressing our issue, whether Batar Ilan is lean or Batar Karka is lean. It's addressing a totally separate issue. Because ever in Mi'ilah b'gidulim, in our brisa holds, that brisa, the town of the brisa holds, that there is no Mi'ilah b'gidulim, and therefore, in either direction, there's no problem. Right? There's no problem whether it's the tree of the layperson going into that Gdish property, over there, it's the tree of the Hejot, so there's nothing to talk about. And when you're talking about the other way, the tree of Hekdesh going to the layman's property, it's growth. The growth that comes after Hekdesh is not Kadosh.
The roots are also considered growth.
I assume so. Right, I assume so. I assume that that's the case of it. I'm sorry?
Why is it Lo Nenin?
Lo Nenin means imi midarabanan, it's not asur. Lo Nenin velo malim. Generally, Lo Malim means midaraisa, there's no mi'ila. Lo Nenin means that the Rabbanan imposed a isur of mi'ila, even though there's no midaraisa. So when you say Lo Nenin velo, right, malim, right, or over here in our case, right, that there is, what's it, how does the brisa read? Lo Nenin velo malim means that even though it's not Asur min haTorah, right? The Rabbanan say, don't get Tanah from it, that it's a preventative measure. So Ravina Amar Lo Kasher. Ravina says, no problem in the Braisa. Kan betok shesh esrei amah, kan chutz l'shesh esrei amah. Right? The solution to the Braisa, or the stira between the Reish and the Sefer of the Braisa, is that we're talking about two different areas. One is within 16 Amot, one is outside of the 16 Amot. So the layman's tree, right, that is going into Hekdesh, is within the 16 Amot. The first 16 Amot of the roots belong to the tree. And therefore, it still belongs to the Hejot, and there's no Me'ilah. On the other way around, whereas the Hekdesh tree that's going to the Hejot's property is beyond 16 Amot. His roots are beyond 16 Amot. And that excess beyond 16 Amot no longer belongs to the tree. And therefore, you can cut them and not be in violation. From that, again, the Gemara solves the Braisa, but then we don't have an answer to our question, who do the Eitzim belong to? And that Gemara does not deal with. Right, Amar Ula, Ilana Samuch Lameitzar Betoch Sheshes Rama Gazlan Hu. If you plant your tree within 16 amot of your friend's property, you are a gazlan. Ve'ein mivin mimenu bikurim, and you can't bring bikurim from that tree. Why? Where is the tree drawing its sustenance from? It's drawing sustenance from your friend's property. Up to 16 amot, the roots are providing the ikar sustenance of the tree, and therefore, if you plant within 16 amot of your friend's property, it's drawing its sustenance from your friend's property. You are a gazlan, taking your right nutrition out of your friend's property. Now, Rashi says, "Ein mivin amenu bikurim." Why can't you bring bikurim for it? Because you have to say asher tavi, or where bikurim says asher tavi mi'artzecha, that you bring it from your land. And you're not bringing the fruits from your land. It's not coming from your land. It's coming from your friend's land. Now Rashi says, "Ain't tzarich lavi mimenu bikurim," that you don't have to bring bikurim from it because it's not asher tavi ma'artzecha, so you don't have to bring it. It sounds like from Rashi, it's a reshus. It becomes a reshus that you don't have to. Whereas others, right? What? Right, so you say that Gazlan, which it seems strange from Rashi, which says Ein Tzarich Lavi Mimenu Bikurim, because Asher Tavi Atzecha. If you look at Tosus, right, Gazlan, who he says Perish Rach Mishum Eivin Gezel Agabim Mizbeach. So explicitly, it's Gezel. You can't bring Gezel to the Mikdash. So he says Veleitlan to Ula Habahedu Baskinen Rabbi Yosi. And this is your question, right, Alan? Wait a minute. We paskin like Rabbi Yosi. Ilan Tok Shalo, Borba Tok Shalo, no problem. So why are we, what happened to Rabbi Yossi over here? So I'm going to table show, he says, V'in Tomer Lefei Ulo Kaman Tesover Kerabonon. Right, so now he says, but let's just say that Ulo holds like the Rabbanan. Ulo doesn't hold like Rabbi Yossi, holds like the Rabbanan. He says, it's not like the Rabbanan either. Because how much room did the Rabbanan require? Four amot. Right, to Ulo Sheish Shrema. So he says,
that was
on
the
right, so that's the requirement. You only have to worry about for a moment. You don't have to worry about you in nikah. So he says that Ula establishes, which will answer your question, Alan, basically the point you just made, which is that the Mishnah is talking about a case of tsunama. The case is bedrock. Your friend, the border is bedrock, and therefore the four amot you require only because of that tekerim. We don't worry about yinika. Had there been not bedrock there, then you would also worry about yinika, and that's where Ula's position is based or premised on the Rabbanan. Then, at the end of the Tosafot, he says, v'nira kaper shakunshis. I think like Rashi. The gafagav de mutar lismoch. Even though you're permitted to put a tree, right on the border, emi vino memenu bikurim. You still can't bring bikurim, right? Zabina asher tavi ma'artzecha. Because it has to be asher tavi ma'artzecha. So the restriction, which is very interesting, Rashi is saying, ein tzarich lavi memenu, sounds like it's not real gezel over here. The point is that it's not classified as artzecha. If it's not classified as artzecha, you can't bring. Now Tosafot reads Rashi saying you cannot bring the bikurim, which, I don't know, it's not so, it's clear from the way the Lashon HaRashi over here, but what he's pointing out is that the problem here is Asher Tavi Ma'artzecha. It's not a problem of real Gezel. It's just a problem that you can't say the Asher Tavi Ma'artzecha. You don't qualify. You're missing one of the qualifications of what Bikurim are. It's Asher Tavi Ma'artzecha. Not that you're a Gezlan, but you just can't bring the Bikurim because there's a technical problem in bringing Bikurim. All right. Where did Ula get these 16 amot? So we'll do one of the answers now, which the Gemara is going to reject. The next answer we'll stop with because it continues through tomorrow. And tomorrow, please bring your calculators and all your geometry because we have to do a lot of work on understanding where Ula's position came from. But we'll start over here. So there's Ilay Mitznan. We say it's from our Mishnah. Eser nitiot hamufuzarot betoch beitza'a. If you have 10 saplings or new plants that are within a beitza'a, if you remember the Mishkan, Chatzer Mishkan is beitza'atayim, which is 50 by 100. So that makes it a beitza'a will be 50 by 50. 2,500 square amot. So a shetach of 2,500 square amot, in which you have 10 nitiot, 10 saplings that are planted there. There's a halacha l'moshe misinai that choshim kol beitza'a bishvilah. At Rosh Hashanah. One is permitted to plow this field all the way until Rosh Hashanah in order to help sustain those netiot, those new plantings. If there are more, you may not do it because they're nutili akira, a person can be okay with them. If there are less, then you can't plow the whole area because that will not help all the trees. So again, it has to be 10 saplings that are there. You're allowed to plow the entire Beitza'a. Now, when you plow the entire Beitza'a, even though in general there are restrictions against working right up to Rosh Hashanah on Erev Shavuot, you have to stop, right? The Mishnayot talk about how far back you have to stop. This is Alach L'Moshe Sinai that you're permitted to plow all the way through. Now, based on that, the math is, Kama Havalahu, how much is it Beitza'a? Trei Alfin B'Chamesh Ma'a? Right, so if you do that, if you take it, it's 2,500 square amot, garmida docho chad v'chad, right, so if you take and divide it up into each one of the trees, how much is each tree entitled to? Right, kama matile, matan v'chamshin. You take 2,500 square amot, and you say each tree is basically entitled or has an area of 250 square amot. And 10 times 250 square amot, you get to 2,500 square amot. So that means that each tree is entitled to 250 square amot. Now, halo havi, right, de ula. That's not like ula. Why? What does ula require? Ula says that you get 16 amot. If you take a shetach of 16 amot, meaning for Ravuna, that means 16 amot of a radius, basically not a radius, but a projectile in each square area of 16 amot. But it starts from the tree 16 amot. That means that you have an area of 32 by 32. Right, if you have a square, right, it'll be a square area of 32 by 2, which is the tree's area of Yenika. 32 by 32 is 1,024 square amot. 1,024 square amot is nowhere near 250 square amot. So the source for Ula certainly cannot be this case of Eser Nitiot. Eser Nitiot, which are saplings, right, which you can understand why it would be less, but still not a makor for Ula, is that each tree is entitled to 250 square amot. And Ula is saying that each tree is entitled to 1,024 square amot, right? A shetach of 32 by 32, meaning that 16 amot in every direction from the tree gets you a square area of 32 by 32, which is way in excess of the 250. So now we won't continue because this continues on tomorrow, but the Gemara will bring a proof from the another, or try to bring other proofs to Ula's position.